All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of It's About Time, DC Sports Podcast. Decided to jump on kind of an odd day. It's a Monday. We used to record on Mondays. Now I kind of do it sporadically, but decided to jump on. A lot's been going on. Bruce Allen has been fired. Ron Rivera, the new head coach. Jack Del Rio, the new defensive coordinator of the Washington Redskins. So we're going to get into that. And also the Nats have been busy, especially in the last week. In the last week, they have pretty much shored up their roster with the exception of maybe one or two additional signings. They've brought on Will Harris, Game 7 Will Harris of the Houston Astros, Starlin Castro, Eric Thames, brought back Howie Kendrick, Asdrubal Cabrera, and today they brought back Daniel Hudson. So we'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about the construction of their 26-man roster, what it will most likely look like. And what are the odds that they add one more big bat, you know, a guy like Donaldson? Will they go over the luxury tax, that kind of stuff? But we're going to start with the Redskins. Before we jump into the Redskins, this is It's About Time, a DC Sports Podcast. We can be followed on Twitter at It's About Time DC1. That's ITS, About Time, DC, and the number one. So give us a follow. Let us know what you think. Shoot us a direct message or, you know, send us a comment on one of our posts. We do post regularly about DC sports and all things that are going on. So let's jump right into it with the Redskins. Bruce Allen is gone. The fire Bruce Allen hashtag worked. The interesting thing to me was the leading up to the last game of the year against Dallas, it was being floated by a lot of people that Dan Snyder was considering reassigning Bruce Allen somewhere else in the organization, mainly to work the new stadium, and that he would no longer be part of football operations. And there was such a backlash to that. I had had conversations with people, you know, 4 to 6 weeks ago where I said, you could bet your dollar that if Bruce Allen is still employed by the Redskins, we're going to find out at some point next year that he's still meddling in football operations. The only way for them to get a fresh start, potentially bring some excitement back, bring some anticipation back, was to get rid of Bruce Allen. And Dan Snyder did more than that. He has cleaned house quite a bit. Bruce Allen is out, completely out, no ties to the team. Larry Hess, the head trainer who has been here a long time, he's out. It's sounding like Eric Schaefer, the salary cap guru, is going to be done after the draft. No new GM is in place. Sounds like they're not going to be naming a new GM until after the draft. And they've hired former Carolina Panthers head coach Ron Rivera. So there are a lot of people that are excited about this. A lot of people are coming back to the Redskins. Bruce Allen's finally gone. And I'm kind of in between, right? There are people that are really excited, and there are people who are like, it's Dan Snyder's still there. What's the difference? I'm in between. And here's why I'm in between. Everything that has happened since the end of the season has been best case scenario. I genuinely did not think that anybody would want to come here and coach the Redskins and work for Dan Snyder with or without Bruce Allen. With all of the coaches that have come through here and have not been successful, and all of the infighting and the leaks and the unnamed sources bashing people. I mean, the list is long. Mike Shanahan didn't leave here unscathed. Joe Gibbs was maybe the only one who left here somewhat unscathed, but his reputation was less than when he came here. He had 4 years, made the playoffs 2 out of the 4, but never really built a consistent winner like they thought. And he left because he just couldn't, I think, honestly, he couldn't handle it anymore. And the Sean Taylor being murdered was a kind of a nail in the coffin. He's like, I've got a successful NASCAR team. I'm just going to go back to that. But I mean, Marty Schottenheimer did not leave here unscathed. Steve Spurrier, I mean, that was a joke, you know. And then the Jim Zorn fiasco where they hired him as the offensive coordinator and then realized nobody wanted him to come on to a team as a head coach when the offensive coordinator was already in place. Jay Gruden, he was given a fair shake. I mean, not he was working for Bruce Allen, but he was given 5+ years to coach the Redskins. He had some good seasons, and then ultimately things didn't work out. But I didn't understand why anybody would want to come here and work for Dan Snyder. I still honestly don't understand it. Because Rivera would have had his pick of teams, and the money can't be that big of a deal. Maybe he likes the challenge. That could be one thing. Maybe the idea of turning a once-story franchise around and bringing them back to glory is something that he yearns for. A lot of people said that he liked the talent on the field, especially the defensive talent. Can't really fault them there. I mean, you got to like also the wideouts with Harmon, McLaurin, and Sims. The Redskins have a nice core of young guys offensively and defensively. And maybe he thinks he can get Trent Williams back. And maybe he likes what he saw from Dwayne Haskins the last few weeks of the season. But I genuinely did not think anybody would want to come here. I thought that it would have to be either somebody who was not considered a head coaching candidate that they were just going to have to bring on, or they were going to have to throw a bunch of money at somebody. I did not expect the Redskins to be the first team to hire somebody and for them to get somebody like a Ron Rivera. I didn't expect it. So that was best case scenario. And now they're bringing Jack Del Rio on as defensive coordinator. Another best case scenario for me. Watching Greg Minuski coach over the last couple of years has been infuriating. I think a lot of the defensive ills have been because of scheme and misusing certain players. I think that they have not fit well into the 3-4. Jack Del Rio is bringing him back to a 4-3. And I think, unlike Minuski, Del Rio will get the most out of his players. He spent 4 years as a defensive coordinator. One with Carolina. This is Jack Del Rio. One with Carolina. And then three with Denver. And in 3 out of the 4 years, he had a top five defense in yards allowed. 2 out of the 4 years, he had a top five defense in points allowed. And in all 4 years as a defensive coordinator, his defense was in the top 10 in takeaways. I love the signing of Jack Del Rio. And I think he and Ron Rivera, I mean, Rivera pretty much had him immediately, so that must have been a package deal. I love that. I think that they're going to bring Kevin O'Connell back to work with Dwayne Haskins. They are interviewing other guys. They interviewed Scott Turner, who was Rivera's offensive coordinator in Carolina, also the son of North Turner. There has been some rumblings of potentially bringing in former Giants head coach Pat Shurmur for an interview. But either way, I like Kevin O'Connell staying. I'd like to keep consistency with Dwayne Haskins and the young offensive wideouts. But all in all, best case scenario, Bruce Allen being gone, hiring Ron Rivera, hiring Jack Del Rio. Sounds like Rivera is bringing on a lot of his staff from Carolina. That's fine by me. People that know what he wants out of a team, I'm good with it. I'm good with it. I know that he did not, Ron Rivera did not have a last good couple of years in Carolina. He was in Carolina for 9 seasons, made the playoffs 4 times, made the Super Bowl once, lost to Denver in 2015-2016. And the last 2 years have not been good. He was 7-9 last year and then 5-7 this year before he was fired after week 13, coincidentally after the Redskins beat him. But in 2017, he was 11-5. And in the last 2 years, one reason you can really point to for the decline of the Carolina Panthers was the fact that Cam Newton was not healthy and they did not have a successful backup quarterback. Those were the two of the big things. And really, 9 years in Carolina, I'm sure, and I believe they were under new ownership. They were just ready for a change. But everything I've read about this guy, Mike Silver did a great profile of him in NFL.com. Everything you read about him, he is a culture-changing head coach. No-nonsense guy. I mean, you could make jokes about it. They've already removed the ping pong table and the shuffleboard game from the locker room. He's a no-nonsense guy, but he's kind of walks that fine line of being a no-nonsense players coach. Every player that has played for him loves him. I mean, they talked to Captain Munderlin, who used to play for him in Carolina. Everybody loves him. And I think it's a great hire for the Redskins. I still believe that everything that happens here ends badly. You know, the Bruce Allen, Mike Shanahan package 10 years ago was highly praised. And that ended badly with Mike Shanahan. bringing on Scott McLuhan to basically evaluate talent and build a roster. Highly praised. And he was backstabbed his way out of town, you know, with the allegations of drinking on the job, etc. Even though everybody knew that he was an alcoholic and not a recovering alcoholic. He was a functioning alcoholic when he came to work for the Redskins. So everything here is ends badly. And I'm not in the camp of, all right, we're going to go get him. I'm not in that camp. I'm in the camp of they still need to show me. But I will admit my excitement has increased. And it has increased a pretty fair margin because I was apathetic this entire season. I kind of watched games just because I felt obligated to, because it was a part of my childhood, a part of my, it's part of my history. But there was nothing until Dwayne Haskins was named the starter that I really wanted to watch. I just watched it because I felt obligated to. I will look forward to next year's games. I will. Do I believe that Dan Snyder is going to stay out of football operations? Maybe for a year or two, he will. And if Rivera is successful right away, then maybe that's the catalyst that keeps Snyder out of it forever. But this team is still somewhat in a rebuild. I mean, you talk about they need – if Brandon Scherff and Trent Williams are gone, you need pretty much an entirely new offensive line. With the exception of maybe center, maybe Chase Roullier stays at center, but – you need a left tackle. You need a right guard. You probably need a right tackle to replace Morgan Moses, even though he's under contract. That's a big rebuild. And then what are you going to do at running back? I love Darius Geis, but the guy got injured twice this year. You're going to bring back Adrian Peterson. He's under contract for one more year, but he's not an every down back. So what do you do at running back? What do you do at tight end? You have no tight ends. Vernon Davis is probably going to retire. Jordan Reed should retire with all the concussion issues that he has. So what are you going to do at tight end? And then do you really try? I mean, I liked the way Haskins looked the last couple of weeks before he sat out the Cowboy game. I liked the way he looked. He looked confident. He's got a strong arm. It sounds like he makes pretty good decisions. I liked all of it. Will he take a step forward? I think if Kevin O'Connell stays on, he probably does. They have a good young core of wide receivers. They need to rebuild somewhat their secondary. I mean, you've got Landon Collins. Does Josh Norman stay now that his old coach is the new head coach? Does he get reinvigorated? They have some good young corners. I mean, I like Quentin Dunbar. Jimmy Moreland flashed a little bit. But they are not one offseason away from being a contender, not in my opinion. They have the number two pick overall. Chase Young is a near lock to join the Redskins, which is awesome. That'll bring me to a final question, kind of discussion topic about the Redskins, because it kind of goes in concert with the fact that they do need to rebuild a bit. So my question would be, you have the number two overall pick. Chase Young is considered a can't-miss prospect, as a especially as a 4-3 defensive end, which the Redskins are conveniently switching back to a 4-3. Do you entertain trade offers? And what kind of trade offer would it take for you to move out of number two? Or do you go for the can't miss guy at a place where you already have a strength? I mean, you have Sweat, Ioannidis, Allen, and Payne on your defensive line. So you would be adding, you would be strengthening a strength by adding to the defensive line, but he's a can't miss player. What do you do? Some have said, if it's a package similar to like an RG3 package, you're not going to get that for a defensive player, but maybe an additional first round pick and a second round pick this year, maybe you jump at that. I think if you have the opportunity to get something like that, where you can trade down in the first round this year, get a first rounder next year, and add a second round pick this year. So if you're confident in the way you draft, you have the potential to add maybe two or three starters in this year's draft. I think it's something you have to consider. But again, Chase Young, he's a lot of people are saying a can't miss defensive player, a guy that can play a high volume of snaps at defensive end, and just a really great pass rusher coming from the outside in a 4-3 defense. So it'll be interesting to see. The Redskins do have a lot of holes to fill. Ron Rivera is going to have to go through the roster with a fine-tooth comb. He did this when he was in Carolina, and he's going to have to say, you're either with us or you're out. And he's going to have to find the people that are going to be believers, and he's going to have to find the people that are going to be a problem, and he needs to get rid of them. It'll be the biggest one. There are two people to me that I find are going to be the most interesting. The first to me is Josh Norman, because he's played for Ron Rivera. Aside from the Redskins, Rivera knows him best. So does Rivera decide to keep him? He's under contract for one more year, or restructure his contract so that his salary cap is less next year, because he thinks that he can get the most out of him like he did 5 years ago. Does he do that? Or the same Rivera that 4 years ago said, we're going to take the franchise tag off of Norman and make him an unrestricted free agent. Is that what he's going to do this year? Because if they cut Josh Norman, it gives him a lot of salary cap relief. That one is very interesting to me, because Norman has expressed interest in staying on and playing for Coach Rivera. That would be interesting. The second one to me, and it's kind of a tandem, but it really starts with Trent Williams. Trent Williams has been interviewed several times this season. He has basically stated a distrust for the Redskins front office, for their training staff. But it was mainly Bruce Allen and probably Larry Hess, who was the head athletic trainer. Larry Hess is gone, and Bruce Allen is gone. Trent Williams is still under contract. Trent Williams has actually at times gone out of his way to praise Dan Snyder. So can Rivera go to Trent Williams and go, hey, listen up, big guy. We want you back. You're one of the best left tackles in football. You're only 31. We want you back. What is it going to take? We want you in-house. We want you to play. What's it going to take? And if Trent Williams comes back, does Brandon Scherff decide it might be worth staying here? Because Brandon Scherff, Pro Bowl guard. He's got an injury history, but he's a Pro Bowl guard. And if you can keep Williams, if you can keep Trent and Scherff, that's two less positions that you have to stock. You don't have to rebuild the entire offensive line, which would be a big help, especially to Dwayne Haskins. Those would be some interesting storylines to watch this offseason, especially as we head towards free agency. There are certainly going to be some players also to watch, like a Ryan Kerrigan. What do they do with him and his contract? There are a lot of moves that they could make to clear up cap space, to go after other players, and we'll address that as the free agency approaches. We are, of course, still in the playoffs. The wild card weekend just finished, but we'll get to all of that down the road before free agency. So that's all I have on the Skins. Let's get into the Washington, your World Series champion, defending World Series champion, Washington Nationals. I have not had a podcast since Anthony Rendon signed with the Anaheim Angels, so I'm going to start with that. And it's kind of a twofer, you know, because it all happened during the winter meetings. Anthony Rendon, Steven Strasburg. I had said in the podcast before the winter meetings that I believed there was only one. It was only possible for the Nats to keep one of them, just based on what they were slated to make. I thought Strasburg would sign a deal similar to David Price, 7 years, maybe 215, 220. I did not think he would get $35 million a year, even though it's deferred, like 80 some million of it is deferred. I did not think he would get that much money. Strasburg signs with the Nats 7 years, $245 million. And Rendon then signs an identical 7 year, $245 million contract with the Anaheim Angels. There was no way that the Nats could remain competitive if they were paying two guys $70 million a year combined. It just wasn't possible. And they decided, hey, we are a team that has always been built on starting pitching. And if you take Steven Strasburg and Anthony Rendon and you say, which one of them is easier to replace in free agency, it's hands down the easier one to replace is Rendon. That's not saying that Rendon is replaceable. Rendon has been amazing. Defensively, he had a 6.4 WAR last year. Offensively, all of the above. I mean, the way he is in the clubhouse, the way he is in the community, all of that. I'm not saying he's replaceable, but he's more replaceable than Steven Strasburg. Strasburg is a top 10 starting pitcher in baseball. And the Nats have, according to Bill James, has a starting pitcher rank. Nats have three of the top 10 starters in baseball, with Scherzer, Strasburg and Corbin. So there were no other arms other than Gerrit Cole out there that would replace, that would adequately replace Steven Strasburg. Because the second tier, I mean, you're talking about Hyunjin Ryu, Rich Hill. I mean, those guys just weren't going to get it done the way Strasburg gets it done. So the Nats made up their mind. We can make up offensive war in other ways. You can't make up the starting pitching war that you get from Steven Strasburg. So I'm very happy for Anthony Rendon. Sounds like he landed kind of where he wanted to. With the Angels, they're going to have a prolific lineup. The best 3-4 combination, he goes from the best 3-4 combination with him and Soto to the best 3-4 combination, Trout and Rendon. Next year, the Angels are going to have some issues pitching the ball, but they got a great guy in Anthony Rendon. I'm very happy for him. I wish him the best. To me, this is not a Bryce Harper situation, because Rendon was never going to get 7 years, $245 million from the Nats. He just wasn't. I think they're the vitriol towards Bryce Harper. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but the vitriol towards Bryce Harper, in my opinion, was kind of two, threefold. Harper, like, pledged his love for DC on his way out and then took a contract with less average salary than the contract that the Nats offered him. And he also went to a division rival. So those three things, that's, we'll see Anthony Rendon once every 3 years or 4 years. And this year we'll see him in Anaheim. So the next time he's going to be in DC is probably not for another 4 to 5 years. So it's not the same thing. I'm very happy for him. I think it's great. He earned it. He definitely earned it. You can go back to podcasts a year ago. I was banging the drum that the Nats needed to focus on extending Rendon. They could have gotten him for probably $60 million less than what the Angels gave him. And they would right now probably have both him and Steven Strasburg under contract. But you can't make it revisionist history. I'm happy for him. Good for him and the Angels. Now, the Nats have not been dormant. They have been among probably the second busiest team in I know they're the second in spending behind, I believe, behind the Yankees. But that's because the Yankees gave Gerrit Cole such a gigantic contract. But they have been active. And they've been active in not just free agents who didn't play for the Nats, but also in bringing back guys that were a big part of the World Series team. So they brought back Howie Kendrick on a 2-year deal. They brought back Asdrubal Cabrera on a 1-year, $2.5 million deal. And today was announced that they brought back Daniel Hudson on a 2-year, $11 million deal. Excuse me. And Hudson was fantastic in the playoffs. Gave up no runs in the wild card game, in the NLDS or the NLCS. Excuse me. And with the exception of 3 runs in game 5 of the World Series, was nearly unhittable also in the World Series. I love the fact that they brought him back. And they added Will Harris, game 7 fame, gave up the probably the biggest home run in Nats history, the Howie Kendrick home run off the foul pole. They added Will Harris, gave him a 3-year deal. Will Harris has been one of the best relievers in baseball over the last 5 years. And he'll join a bullpen with Hudson now and Doolittle. They have a very solid back end of the bullpen. Probably one of the best in the National League. So they turned a weakness into a strength by bringing Huddy back and also adding Will Harris. The Nationals have also been adding to their infield. In addition to Kendrick and Cabrera, they signed Starlin Castro, who spent last year with the Miami Marlins, and Eric Thames, who spent last several years with the Milwaukee Brewers. So the Nats are going about this piecemeal. They are replacing Anthony Rendon's war with multiple players as opposed to one big player like a Josh Donaldson. That's not to say that they're out on a Josh Donaldson or a trade for Chris Bryant. We'll get to that in a little bit. So Starlin Castro last year, he hit .270, 22 home runs, but only a .300 on base percentage. He struck out a lot. He K'd a lot. He does not walk very much. He's not going to be an on-base machine, but he will provide some pop and will drive in some runs. He will also have significantly more protection in the Nationals lineup than he did hitting for the Marlins last year. Now, he's a .280 career hitter. His on-base percentage is slightly higher career at .320 than what he hit last year. I like him as a player. He's only 29 years old, going to be 30 years old this year. And I like him as a player. He's versatile. He can play second base, shortstop, third base. I think he's going to see a lot of time at second, might see some time at third if they don't add a full-time third baseman. I like the addition of Starlin Castro. Then you bring in Eric Thames. Eric Thames, power hitter, bats left-handed, first baseman, but could also play some outfield if they need him to. He's basically going to be this year's Matt Adams. Last year, 25 bombs, hit .250, had a .350 on base percentage though. So his OPS was .851 in about 400 at bats. I like this addition. He's not going to be a full-time player. He'll probably play 80 to 90 games, start probably 80 to 90 games. Last year, he started, let's see, he played in 149 games and had 459 plate appearances for them. So he's almost a full-time starter for them as a first baseman slash outfielder. He's got a lot of pop. He's 33 years old. He's a nice left-handed option at first base, especially if they bring back a Ryan Zimmerman who, you know, will play maybe half the time. He and Thames can split time, and then Thames can also kind of serve as a fifth outfielder, you know, playing right field when Eaton needs a day off, that kind of thing. I love the addition of Eric Thames. I think you could, if they don't add any other big bats, Eric Thames could be your cleanup hitter this year, hitting behind Juan Soto. He does provide a little bit of protection for Juan Soto, not nearly as much as Rendon provided by batting in front of Soto, but it's better than the alternative without a guy like Eric Thames. So what's left for the Nats, right? They've brought back Kendrick Cabrera-Hudson. They've added Will Harris, Starlin Castro, Eric Thames. So their current 26-man roster, as constructed with the players that they have under contract or that are arbitration eligible. Your position players, you have your two catchers, Suzuki and Gomes. You have your infielders of Thames, Kendrick, Cabrera, Castro, of course, Trey Turner. And then you have your outfield, Soto, Eaton, Robles, most likely Michael A. Taylor is your fourth outfielder. So then you really have, if you're thinking that they're going to carry 13 position players, you have two spots left. One of them presumably to a right-handed first baseman, unless they're going to make Howie Kendrick the right-handed first baseman. So that would be probably Ryan Zimmerman, one would think. They have enough money under the luxury tax to sign Zim. I don't think he's trying to break the bank. And he has accepted the fact that he's a part-time player, and he's also said he doesn't want to play anywhere else. So Zim makes sense there, and then your 13th player is probably a utility guy, somebody like a Wilmer Defoe, maybe an Adrian Sanchez. I doubt it would be Carter Kieboom. I think they're going to start Carter Kieboom in the minors. I mean, if he flashes, maybe they bring him up and make him their everyday third baseman or second baseman. But one thing that these signings have done is it has given them versatility in the infield. You have guys like Castro who can play second base, shortstop, and third. You have Kendrick who can play first, second, and third. You have Cabrera, who can play every position in the infield with the exception of catcher. So they have a lot of versatility. Eric Thames can play first. They have a lot of versatility. They can do mixes and matches. Davey Martinez is going to have a lot of different lineup combinations depending on who's pitching, who needs time off, that kind of thing. They're going to have amazing depth and a really good bench with the players that they brought on. And these players, because of the World Series last year, because of the success the Nats had, and the veteran leadership that the Nats already have in the locker room, you have to imagine Cabrera was here last year. He's already bought in. And you have to imagine that Castro, who said he wanted to play for Davey Martinez, and Eric Thames are going to buy in to the way that Martinez is going to build his lineups and the matchups that he's going to play. I think that, yeah, they don't have the flashy 3-4 like they had last year with Soto and Rendon, but I think it's effective enough, especially with the starting pitching and now the bullpen that the Nats have. Let's get to their pitchers. If you imagine with a 26-man roster that they're going to carry 26 pitchers. So you have your top four starters, Strasburg, Scherzer, Corbin, and Anibal Sanchez. And then your fifth starter will probably be one of the following three, Eric Fetty, Joe Ross, or Austin Voth. Then you have your top three relievers, Doolittle, Hudson, and Will Harris. And then you have Wander Suero, Tanner Rainey, Hunter Strickland, and then I think it's with Yoenis Elias, who will probably be their lefty guy out of the bullpen. And then the 13th spot will probably go to one of the three that doesn't make it as the fifth starter, Ross, Fetty, and Voth. Now, things could change there. I don't think necessarily that Elias is a lock to make the opening day roster. It's possible that Strickland's not a lock to make the opening day roster. Strickland had some mechanical issues last year. It sounds like the pitching staff addressed it or were addressing it. They had identified it and were addressing it during the postseason. He was left off of the World Series roster. Maybe we see a different Hunter Strickland this year. But again, if he's not up to snuff, maybe they don't put him on the 25-man roster. So there are some moving parts there, but definitely the top. You really feel comfortable with the top five guys, Doolittle, Hudson, Harris, Suero, and Rainey. And I think one way that it could kind of shake out, Doolittle closes. Harris is your eighth inning guy, and then you could use Hudson kind of as the versatile, Josh Hader, Andrew Miller kind of fireman that comes out in high leverage situations. Especially with the new three batter rule. Every reliever has to either finish an inning or face three batters. I like the way that the Nats bullpen setting up. They don't have, specialists who can only face one guy. Those are dinosaurs. They're things of the past. They're not going to have jobs anymore. Like a guy like they had last year with Tony Sipp, not going to work. So I like the way their bullpen shaping up. I don't think they're going to add another arm. I think that they've done enough to make their bullpen one of the better ones in the National League, significantly better than last year. If anything, I think if they're going to add another player, it would probably be Ryan Zimmerman and then maybe a trade. And this is where we get to the last couple topics that I wanted to cover on the Nationals. And it's a two-parter that really kind of go together. And the first part is, are the Nats willing to go over the luxury tax? Depending on who you talk to, they've got somewhere in the neighborhood of $12 to $15 million left in the luxury tax. So if they want Josh Donaldson, they're going to have to go over the luxury tax. He's going to get somewhere in the 4 years to $100 to $110 million range. So if they want Josh Donaldson, they're going to have to go over the luxury tax. I think that the Learners might be willing to go over the luxury tax for the right player. The question is Josh Donaldson the right player? He's a fantastic player. Don't get me wrong. A fantastic player. Last year was a six war guy, played great defense at third base for the Braves. He hit 37 home runs, had a 380 on base percentage, 900 OPS. Fantastic. He played in 155 games last year. But one thing that's hard to ignore, in 2017 with the Blue Jays, he only played in 113 games. 2018, he only played in 52 games total, 36 with Toronto and 16 with Cleveland. He has a bit of an injury history. The last time he played a full season prior to last year was 2016. He played 155 games with Toronto. And he is 5 years removed from his MVP season with Toronto, 2015, when he had 123 RBIs, 41 home runs, and he had an OPS of 939. Great player. Don't get me wrong. He's a career 273 hitter, OPS of 878. 33 years old, though. He just turned 34 in December. He's 34 years old. So if you give him a four-year deal, you're paying him until he's 38. And the first couple of years of that deal will look probably pretty good. As long as he stays healthy, the last couple of years of the deal might be tough. And the Nats like financial flexibility. They like financial flexibility. They have a ton of money locked up in their rotation for the next several years. And with guys like Trey Turner, who's going to be a free agent in a few years, and then Soto and Robles, who you might want to try to extend before they're free agents 5 years from now, signing Donaldson makes them less flexible. So I think that now, especially with the signings that they've made, Donaldson is a long shot. I don't think it's going to happen. I think he'll probably end up going back to Atlanta. So where do the Nats go? Do they want to add another big bat in the middle of the lineup in addition to Eric Thames? It's looking like probably not. It's looking like they're pretty set. But, I mean, if they really want to go for it, Do you trade for Chris Bryant? Chris Bryant has a grievance filed with Major League Baseball. He believes that he should have 6 years of service time. The Cubs say he should only have five. The odds are he's probably going to lose his grievance, and then the Cubs will have two more years of team control. And if that's the case, his trade value will be higher because he's got 2 years as opposed to one. He is an interesting candidate for the Nats. First of all, he's a versatile guy. He can play infield, he can play outfield, but really he's a third baseman. And last year, decent year for him at 280, 31 home runs. And career 284 hitter. He was an MVP in 2016. He's been pretty consistent. He's had some shoulder issues, cost him about 50 games in 2018. But he's played, aside from 2018, he's played 147 or more games in four of his five seasons. So what would it take to get him? It sounds like the Cubs want Victor Robles. To me, that's a non-starter. Robles has 5 years left of team control for the Nats, and he's ascending. You don't give up a Victor Robles. But maybe you give up a Carter Kieboom, a Joe Ross, and maybe one other player. You know, or a Carter Kieboom, an Eric Fetty, and one. You know, let him pick. They want Fetty, Voth, Ross, Carter Kieboom, you know, and maybe you throw in another prospect. If that gets the deal done, then yeah. I mean, that would be enough for me, I think, to bring him on. So he's got a $12.9 million contract for 2000. Oh, that was last year, excuse me, 2019. He's arbitration eligible this year. So he'll probably make somewhere in the $15 to $16 million range this year. And then next year, probably make, you know, $18, $19, $20 million. If you bring him on, if you trade for him, you try to talk extension if you can, I would think. But my gut says they're probably not going to do that either. I think with the signing of Eric Thames, when they've already signed, and, you know, they gave Castro a decent amount of money. They gave Thames, they got Thames relatively cheap at $4 million. But, I mean, these guys are locked. They're not guys that you're going to, you know, you're not just bringing them to spring training. I think you bring Zim in, and I think that's it. I think you roll with the guys that you have. You see how the offense looks the first couple months of the season. If you realize that you really need a bat to protect Soto and you don't have that bat in your organization, then you approach the trade market. Maybe then you approach the Chicago Cubs and see what they think about making a trade for Bryant. I think you can roll to opening day with the position players, Grant, you know, if they add Zim, with the position players that they have. I think that's the way it's shaping up. They'll be under the luxury tax, which will make the learners happy, but also gives the Nats flexibility. So I think that's probably how they're going to roll. I wouldn't be surprised if Rizzo made a trade. There's been a lot of talk online, especially by a Twitter account that I really enjoy following. It's called Talk Nats, at Talk Nats. They've been talking a lot about Kyle Seager with Seattle. Kyle Seager, had a great start to his career, but he has been kind of in a decline over the last several years. I'm going to pull up his page right now. Last year, only hit 240. He did have 23 home runs, but a 320 on base percentage. He's 32 years old, going into his age 32 season, has spent his entire career in Seattle. And his last 3 years have not been great. He hit 250 in 2017, 221 in 2018, and 239 last year. And over the last 3 years, he's averaged about 25 home runs a year and somewhere in the neighborhood of 80 RBI. Last year, he only played 106 games, but for the most part of his career, he's been an everyday guy. The one thing that I don't like about Kyle Seager is his contract. He's going to make $19.5 million this year, $18.5 million in 2021, and then there's a $15 million team option in 2022. So he has 3 years of control, but it's 3 years at about $52 million. Not a small amount of money. Now, the Nats could take it on, especially if Seattle's going to pay part of it and stay under the luxury tax, and they could probably get him for low-end prospects because he's overpaid and has not performed well. And there's a belief that a change of scenery would be great for him. But it would have to, the Seattle would have to eat a decent chunk of his contract, at least over the next 2 years when he's slated to make $38 million over the next 2 years, 19.5 this year, 18.5 next year. They'd have to eat, I think they'd probably have to eat probably $15 million of the 38. So you lower the cost to the Nats to about $12 million a season. And then the Nats maybe give them, you know, a mid-level prospect or a couple mid-level prospects. That's an option. You know, but he's not a middle of the order bat. He's not going to bat fourth for you. He'll probably bat fifth, sixth, seventh, somewhere in that neighborhood. And at that point, you have a glut of infielders with, you know, Castro, Cabrera, Kendrick, etc. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. I think they probably stand pat, brings him back, roll into the season, and if an adjustment needs to be made prior to the trade and deadline, they probably do it then. But it'll be interesting to see. I really like the way the Nats have gone about this offseason. They haven't, like, gone crazy, but they also have not been complacent. They have built, as Mike Rizzo likes to say, a 90-ish win team that has the potential to win the division, a potential to make it to the playoffs. And once you're in the playoffs, as the Nats showed in 2019, anything can happen. And they have the best starting rotation in baseball. I think they have the overall best pitching staff in baseball now when you combine their rotation and their bullpen. And that, it's tough to beat. I think that they are, along with the Braves, the two favorites to win the National League East. I think that the Mets are a step below both the Nats and the Braves. And I think the Phillies are slotted again probably for fourth place in the division. Again, of course, barring injuries to certain teams, et cetera, et cetera. So I love what the Nats have done. I like Mike Rizzo. I think that the next thing on the agenda after they most likely re-sign Ryan Zimmerman is Mike Rizzo's going into the last year of his contract. He deserves a significant extension. And Davey Martinez is going into the last year of his contract. He also deserves an extension. The guy won the World Series in the second year as manager after being one of the most maligned managers in baseball. Remember 19 and 31. He brought them back from the brink. Davey Martinez deserves a contract extension. Mike Rizzo deserves a long, long contract extension. Mike Rizzo should be the GM here for a long time. I'd like to see Davey get maybe another 2 years added on to this year, or maybe three. With a salary increase, he certainly deserves it. As we saw one player already, Starlin Castro, say, "I want to play for Davey Martinez." You heard Will Harris say, "I've heard Washington is a great place to play. They have a great clubhouse." And that is partially because of Davey Martinez. So I'd like to see both of them extended, and we'll see what happens. But I like what the Nats have done so far. As a fan, they won the World Series, which nothing will ever beat that. But for them to then be aggressive this offseason and go, "We're going for it again. We're not going to scale back. We're going for it again. That there's no better feeling. Yeah, there are people that are upset that Rendon went, but if you're being practical, there was really no way to bring them both back unless you were really just going to blow up the payroll. The Donaldson thing, I really thought it was going to happen a couple weeks ago. But as this is dragged out, and they say that Atlanta went from 3 years to 4 years, Donaldson, I think, wants to be back in Atlanta. And because of that, I think the Nats are out. And the Nats are showing that they're on to, like, plan C. Plan A was probably Rendon. Plan B was Donaldson. Plan C is we're going to patch it together with a bunch of versatile guys that are going to play matchups. And we're going to get that 6.4 WAR that we lost from Rendon by combining it with, you know, three or four different guys. And they'll see if it works. And if it doesn't work, they'll address it. Most likely at the trade deadline. Anyway, that's all I've got. You know, hope you guys enjoyed it. I appreciate you listening. Again, check us out on Twitter. It's About Time DC1. That's ITS About Time DC1. Give us a follow. Shoot us a direct message. You know, reach out. Let us know what you think. And we'll talk to you guys again soon. As the Redskins ramp up towards free agency and as the Nats make additional moves to finalize their roster before pitchers and catchers report. But again, thanks guys for listening, and we'll talk to you guys soon.